to Today's Woman. I'm Dana Clark, along with Dr. Carol Kowalczyk, Today's Woman, about women's health and fertility, and provides a community for women to help one another. Sponsored by the Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health, which supports women. On the show tonight, Dr. Daniela Rodriguez, who specializes in plastic and reconstructive surgery, she'll discuss the decision-making process. Also, Dr. Gary Chapman, New York Times best-selling author, The Five Love Languages. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And we'll also talk about a nonprofit agency called Seasons of Life Fertility. That's all coming up next on Today's Woman on WJR. You're listening to Today's Woman with Dr. Carol Kowalczyk, sponsored by the Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health. I'm your co-host, Dana Clark. Tonight, we'll discuss fertility health as we age. We'll also speak with Dr. Daniela Rodriguez, a plastic and reconstructive surgeon, who'll discuss a decision-making process that goes into enhancing our bodies and aging gracefully. We'll also speak with New York Times bestselling author Dr. Gary Chapman, who wrote The Five Love Languages. He comes to our area in Detroit on April 18th for a marriage workshop. If you'd like more info on fertility health, our show sponsor is Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health. Visit mifertility.com or call 586-576-0431. That's 586-576-0431. So, Dr. Carol, there were some recent articles in ARP about people, women, obviously, having children into their 50s and 60s. I mean, really? What age should be the cutoff? I know 45 is a new what?
28.
Right. But is that healthy?
You know, that's a very good question, and I'm finding in my practice, 45 is the new 28, 50 is the new 35. Mm-hmm. We women are looking younger, acting, you know, way younger than our, you know, grandmothers
right.
would say is our age.
Hipper.
You got it. And so we are doing amazing things, and we're staying fit. However, we have to remember as we get older that our eggs do not listen. So biologically, we have all the eggs we've ever had in our life, and we are not going to make them any better. Mm-hmm. So what happens when you wait for Mr. Amazing and not Mr. Sperm Donor mm-hmm. to get married at 44, 45, 50, you have to be open to the out-of-the-box choices. Our ASRM, or American Society of Reproductive Medicine, has tried to answer the question for you as to when is it too, quote-unquote, old for a woman to have a baby. And with regard to egg donor, our cutoff is for fresh egg donor and delivery is 50-51. For frozen is 52-53.
Okay.
So, in other words, if a woman comes in and she's 45 years young and I do my hormone evaluation and unfortunately the hormones suggest that the ovarian reserve is too low and she's unable to get pregnant, I offer her three out-of-the-box options: egg donor, embryo donation, or adoption.
Okay.
Adoption is 70% successful. A lot of people think, oh, I'm just going to adopt and I'll get my baby, but 30% of young ladies change their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Embryo donation is where couples are done with IVF and they do not want to throw the embryos away, so they donate them.
Okay.
And there's adoption agencies for embryos. And the couple will adopt the embryos, will go through a screening.
Mm-hmm.
In the literature, that's about 30 to 40% successful because these embryos are being developed in all different labs with all different qualities, and there's all different indications that the previous couple who made the embryos, you know, wanted to do IVF.
Mm-hmm.
The egg donation is one that's really becoming more exciting for a lot of older couples. Egg donor is where you either know someone mm-hmm. in your side of the family, a niece, mm-hmm. a sister, a cousin, a friend,
mm-hmm.
or there's an anonymous egg donor agencies who young ladies in their 20s donate their eggs. You pick them anonymously and you get a whole profile
okay.
of characteristics, social history, family history, occupation, eye color, hair color, all that. And then we use the donor egg through IVF. We get the egg, fertilize with the husband's sperm, make the embryos, put that in the recipient's uterus after we've prepped her uterus.
Mm-hmm.
The age cutoff for me to do that for someone is 50-51, and the success rate is about 65-70%.
Okay. So the articles, I know you have them with you. Did,
mm-hmm.
did they say anything that we really like need to know that you want to point out? from the article?
Well, I can tell you that from the AARP, there are women in their late 50s, mid-60s that are trying to have a baby. There's one young lady who I'll keep her identity respectful, but 59 years young, married a gentleman, 46. They thought they were done having kids, but she fell in love and decided to do egg donor. They successfully had twins, and you know... You know, she's a young 59. If you look at her picture, she's 59 going on 36.
Okay.
You know, so for their particular purpose, there was a young a woman in India who was 70 who had no heirs, and they went on and did an egg donor, and she got pregnant. The ethics about this is always getting discussed.
Yeah. Is it healthy, though?
Medically, if someone in her 50s is medically healthy, and all women who are over 44 need medical clearance. They need an EKG, mammogram, pap smear, a clearance from their doctor. They theoretically, we can get that uterus to respond to the hormones and carry a pregnancy. With any woman of advanced maternal age, there's a risk of high blood pressure, diabetes, heart disease, premature delivery. And the older a woman gets, they inherently have more medical conditions, which then could get exacerbated by the changes in pregnancy.
Are the kids healthy? I just imagine like an old grandpa coming out, with a hat on and a cigar.
Hey, I'm a daddy. Yay.
Are the kids healthy?
You know what? We have great OBGYNs, and with proper, you know, prenatal care, the kids are usually fine with an egg donor. But you mentioned about the grandpa with with the cigar. You know, fertility goes down with the age of the gentleman as well. So late 40s, early 50s, you start to see a higher risk of maybe birth defects and other conditions with male, you know, factor and sperm. So, and then, you know, when the child is, you know, 10 and then mom and dad are 70, 80, what about the longevity and who's going to take care of the child? So that's where the ethics comes in, where what's the age cutoff? And just so you know, for the ASRM or my world, that age cutoff is 50, 51, 52, somewhere around there.
Okay. Now, what's the success rate of the donor pregnancies?
Actually, 65, 70%. Our anonymous donors are in their 20s. And so they've got, you know, obviously younger eggs. Known donors, so if it's your sister, cousin, or whatever, they tend to be early 30s. So we usually quote the success rate in when someone's in their 30s for the age of the egg at the time.
And let's talk about the donors. Sperm. We always focus everything on the women, but as you brought up, you know, sperm, they get old too. Tell me about the success of the donor sperm and what is the cutoff age once again?
Well, again, you know, that's what Michael Douglas got Catherine Zeta pregnant.
Right.
You know, she was 60 something, she was 30 something. So men are constantly making sperm forever, and they make sperm a new match every 72 days.
Okay.
So if a male, as he gets older, has lower sperm counts or very poor sperm, then donor sperm can be used. And at that situation, if the guy's a lot older, we base the success rate on the age of the woman's egg.
Okay. Well, we're just getting started, actually, on the show. We've got some great stuff coming up. You're listening to Today's Woman Radio Show with Dr. Carol Kowalczyk of the Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health. Call 586-576-0431. We'll be right back on JR. Welcome back to Today's Woman Radio Show with Dr. Carol Kowalczyk of Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health. I'm your co-host, Dana Clark. Tonight, we're speaking with Dr. Daniela Rodriguez about enhancing our bodies and aging gracefully. Visit MIFertility.com to learn more about our sponsor, Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health.
So let me brag a little bit about Dr. Rodriguez, who is not only beautiful, but amazingly brilliant. She was born and raised in the Detroit area. She received a BA from the University of Michigan, master's degree in clinical physiology and her medical degree from the University of Health Sciences in Chicago Medical School. Following that, she did a five-year intensive plastic surgery program at Montefiore Medical Center in New York City. She is certified by the American Board of Plastic Surgery and has staff privileges at pretty much everywhere, Henry Ford, Beaumont, Grosse Pointe, and the St. John system. So, very knowledgeable young woman.
I need the family deal. I'll say that starting off. Dr. Rodriguez, how did you get interested in the field, in this particular field?
Actually, started long ago. At the early age of 15, I traveled with a mission group to Central and South America as a translator. to help physicians translate for cleft lip and cleft palate surgeries.
Mm. That's important work. It really is, because those a lot of people really do need help, not just for looking better. It's, a lot of times we think of reconstructive surgery or surgery in general in a vain type of way. Mm-hmm. But it is very important work that you're doing for people who, you know, otherwise would not be able to have a decent life.
Right.
What is the most important thing that, like, when women come see you, what is the biggest thing they come see you about?
It is so varied, but most, I do so many different kinds of surgery, everything from breast and body mm-hmm. recontouring to facial plastic surgery, and women from all different walks of life, all different ethnicities as well. Many women will come to see me after having had children with body changes, and many women after changes of life with body changes. Many women will come and see me when they're planning surgeries such as hysterectomies. And I see, of course, women who are having breast reconstructive surgery as well. So many different walks of life.
And how do we know we're getting a doctor with proper training? We hear so many commercials, and when I walk into a plastic surgeon's office with this big, important decision in my life, what should we be looking for in choosing the proper plastic surgeon to work on those areas for us?
I am so grateful you're asking me this question, because lay people don't know enough to ask this question. It is so important that they ask, are you certified by the American Board of Plastic Surgery? It's not enough to ask, are you board certified? Too many surgeons out there are setting up a shingle and saying that they're board certified. And the lay person asks, are you board certified? And they're saying yes. But there are doctors out there who are board certified by, for example, emergency medicine, or board certified by ENT, ear, nose, and throat, or board certified by, another board. But it's important that they ask, by which board are you certified? Another important question is that they need to ask, are you certified to perform these procedures in a hospital? Do you have hospital privileges to perform this surgery? Can we board this surgery in a hospital? And if they cannot, then that's a red flag. Mm-hmm. Because hospitals have very strict rules with regard to who may perform these kinds of procedures in their hospital because of medical legal reasons.
That's interesting. So most of the things you do, you prefer to do in a hospital and not in an outpatient facility?
Well, for example, there are procedures that are done in outpatient settings. Liposuction, for example, is a very common procedure that's done outpatient. And most of the procedures that we do can be done outpatient. And for that reason, many people who are not certified by the American Board of Plastic Surgery can set up a shingle, can create an operating room facility, and can perform these procedures on lay people who don't know any better.
Plastic and reconstructive surgery isn't an easy decision to make, so how do you guide your patients through it?
The most important thing is to ask the patient what is their objective, what is it they want to have met. If someone walks in with pictures of a runway model and they're unrealistic about mm-hmm. their expectations, then it's clear to me that they're not a good surgical candidate. If someone walks in and they have realistic expectations and they're motivated and they're healthy candidates, then it becomes very easy for a realistic patient to have their expectations met.
Now, would insurance cover any of these procedures?
They do, actually. They cover quite a bit of them. And for example, a weight loss patient who has lax skin and suffers from skin fold infections, often portions of an abdominoplasty or a tummy tuck is covered. Mm-hmm. In patients who have large pendulous breasts, who have back and neck pain and bra strap grooving of their shoulders, they often get breast reductions covered.
Mm-hmm.
In patients who have scars or dog bites, or it has to be documented with other forms of caregivers if it's problematic. They often will cover issues that have led to medical problems.
And what can we do as a patient before we go to see you to maximize our success with plastic surgery? Like, is there a certain weight loss you're looking for to optimize that tummy tuck or the liposuction or whatever?
Yes, that's a great question. Generally speaking, insurance companies like it when the BMI is below 30, at or below 30. They will often deny claims if the BMI is over 30. Mm-hmm. The risks of surgery increase with BMIs over 30. Mm-hmm. And if patients come to me and the BMIs are greater than 30, and even if they're willing to pay out of pocket and they're not willing to or desirous of insurance coverage, I will encourage them to get a BMI under 30 just because it's safer for them to do so.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us where your office is, so if in case people want to come check you out.
Oh, well, my office is at 21727 Mack Avenue in St. Clair Shores. Mm-hmm. It's at about 8.5 Mile and Mack. And it is across the street from St. Joan of Arc Church.
Okay.
And do you have a phone number or website?
Yes, where... my phone number is 586-777-7260. And the website is www.drdrodriguez.com.
Excellent. Well, I really appreciate you being on the show. And one last question. Do you ever advise not to have plastic surgery?
Oh, thank you for having me on the show. And actually, I do. There is a condition called body dysmorphic syndrome, and that is, like other addictions in life, some people become addicted to plastic surgery, and they become obsessed with changing and obsessed with deformities that they do not actually have, and I've had to turn down some people for that disorder.
Wow. Well, I think you're fabulous, Daniela.
Thank you.
Dr. Rodriguez, thank you so much
As
for being
I do
on
you,
the
I
show.
Appreciate it.
No problem.
It was great talking to you both.
Oh, same here.
Thanks for being on Today's Woman.
Have a great one. Thanks.
You too.
You're listening to Today's Woman Radio Show with Dr. Carol Kowalczyk. We'll be right back with more on WJR. Welcome back to Today's Woman Radio Show with Dr. Carol Kowalczyk of Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health. I'm Dana Clark. We're speaking with Dr. Gary Chapman, author of The Five Love Languages, who comes to Grosse Pointe, Michigan on April 18th for a marriage seminar. Visit MIFertility.com to learn more about our sponsor, Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health.
I wanted to introduce Dr. Gary Chapman. He is a marriage and family counselor for over 35 years with both an MA and or master's and PhD. He's also the author of New York Times bestseller, The Five Love Languages, which I find very valuable and very fun to read. He's also a senior associate pastor at Calvary Baptist Church in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and will soon be holding a marriage conference here in the Detroit area on April 18th of 2015. Visit cultivatinghealthyfamilies.org to learn more about that conference. But my goodness, Dr. Chapman, you are quite busy. Wow.
Well, you're right, Carol. I stay busy either writing or counseling or on the road speaking.
You are a blessing, a blessing. So let's start with your book. What compelled you to write Love Languages?
You know, Carol, I had been using that concept in my counseling and in small groups probably for 5 years, and I really knew that it would change people's lives. So I thought if I could put that concept in a book and write it in the language of the common person, leaving out the psychological jargon so people could get it, mm-hmm. that it could help a lot of people. And, of course, I had no idea that the book would sell almost 10 million copies now
wow.
in English and be translated in 50 languages around the world. So it really, it's been amazing to see how that book has been used to help so many couples learn how to connect emotionally with each other.
Now, the term love languages has become a buzz phrase. So tell me a little more, can you explain what that means, the five love languages?
Well, you know, it's very similar to spoken language, Carol. Every one of us grew up speaking a language with a dialect. I grew up speaking English Southern style, okay?
I love the accent. I love it.
But we all grew up with a language and a dialect, and that's the one we understand best. Well, the same thing is true with love. One of the five love languages typically is your primary love language. That's the one that really speaks deeply to you. And it doesn't mean you don't appreciate the others, but that's the one you understand best. And I just call it your primary love language.
Mm-hmm.
And typically a husband and wife has a different language. So you have to learn how to speak the other person's language. That is, how to communicate love in a way that the other person will get it.
Okay. Very cool. And so that's the primary love language. What is yours? I'm curious.
And mine is words of affirmation, and my wife's is acts of service. That's why before I left the house this morning, I took the trash out, okay?
You know what? That is so funny that you said that. I think many women, that is probably one of their primary love languages. I can tell you in my household that, you know, if my husband, the sexiest thing my husband or one of them can do for me is to do the dishes. And I think women being so busy with all their multitasking, you know, I saw him one day doing the dishes, cleaning after dinner, and he's like, honey, go sit down and relax. I'm like, honey, I am all over you. As soon as you are done with those dishes, that was the coolest thing for me. So exactly what are the five love languages for people who aren't familiar?
Well, one of them is words of affirmation, using words to affirm the other person. You look nice in that outfit. Really appreciate what you did. Just using words to affirm them. You can speak the words. You can write the words. I guess you could sing the words, Carol.
Okay.
But it's using words to affirm the other person. A second love language is acts of service, doing something for the other person. We're talking about that when we talk about washing dishes and taking out trash. It's acts of service. It's doing something for your spouse that you know they would like for you to do. And then there's gifts. It's universal to give gifts as an expression of love. My academic background before I studied counseling was anthropology. I did an undergrad and a master's degree in anthropology. It's a study of cultures. Mm-hmm. We have never discovered a culture where gift-giving is not an expression of love.
Mm.
It's universal to give gifts.
Okay.
The gift says, they were thinking about me. Look what they got for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's quality time, giving the person your undivided attention. I don't mean sitting in the same room watching television together because someone else has your attention. I mean the TV's off. You're looking at each other, talking, interacting with each other, taking a walk down the road and talking, going out to eat, assuming you talk.
Right.
But it's giving the other person your undivided attention. And then number five is physical touch. We've long known the emotional power of physical touch. That's why we pick up babies and hold them and kiss them and cuddle them. And long before the baby understands the meaning of the word love, the baby feels love by physical touch. So in marriage, it's such things as holding hands, kissing, embracing, the whole sexual part of the marriage, physical touch. And for some people, this is their primary language. So the basic idea is discovering your love language, discovering your spouse's love language, and then choosing to speak it, because love is a choice.
Very, very, very powerful, powerful information. I can tell you, you know, I am married to another physician, and it's just crazy. Our life, we have four kids, and I'll tell them, I'm like, you know, dude, if I don't have a date night with you, you know, at least, you know, I'd love it once a week, but once a month, I feel less connected. And it's important to have that time. And I don't know, I think we shared off the air that I'm a fertility specialist. That is one thing that when couples are going through fertility, it's very stressful there, too. There's a lot of emotion. There's a lot of, you know, sorrow and anger and frustration. And both partners are focusing on the task of getting pregnant, the tests, the monitoring, the medications, the sex on a schedule, that the couples going through fertility are struggling with connecting again. So, you know, we have a counseling service, all fertility centers do, and Claire Maurer-Hogan is our counselor, and she is a huge advocate of the your book and the love languages. So as part of our help in supporting fertility couples, they get a lot of information about your book and your philosophies, and I think it's helped quite a few people. Is there a testimony that you can give of a couple that might have attended a conference of yours that has totally changed their relationship?
You know, Carol, I get the people almost every week who walk up to me and say, Dr. Chapman, 5 years ago or 3 years ago, we were just next door to divorce, and somebody gave us your book, and it was like the lights came on, and we looked back over our marriage and realized how we had missed each other. We were sincere, but we were missing each other, and we discovered each other's language, began to speak that language, and it literally saved our marriage. I have scores of people who say that. One couple really kind of stands out in my mind. They did come to one of my seminars, and they had been married to each other for 30 years, but for 20 years, they had not even taken a vacation together. They were just roommates living in the same house. And the guy said, you know, I shared with a friend of mine how miserable I was, and he gave me your book, and he said, I thought to myself, I don't have time to read another book. You know, he said, I threw it in the back seat of my car. But he said, when I got home, I picked it up, I took it in, I read the first chapter, and I couldn't lay it down. And
That's
he said,
cool.
I stayed up till 2 a.m., and I read the book, and I thought, man, if I had read this 20 years ago, our marriage would have been very different. So he said, I gave a copy to my wife and asked her if she'd read it and tell me what she thought. And she read it and came back and said, I think if we'd have had this book earlier, our marriage would have been different. And he said, I asked her, do you think it would make any difference if we tried now? And she said, we don't have anything to lose.
That's true.
So he said,
That's
we
true.
Tried it. And he said, Dr. Chapman, this past summer, we took our first vacation together.
Wow.
We love being together now. He said, it's just made all the difference in the world. You know, Carol, I think because our deepest emotional need on the human level is to feel loved by the significant people in our lives, and especially if you're married, your spouse. It's a part of who we are. We want to be loved.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, then all the rest of life, you can work out the other things. But when you don't feel loved, it's very difficult to work through the normal conflicts that a couple has.
Well, that's true. And when you have a married couple that, you know, that the passion's all in the first couple of years, and then guess what? You know, life happens. You have jobs, you have job changes, you have kids, then you have soccer, then you have piano, then you have homework, then you have, you know, college. I think that couples will take care of their family, meaning their children first, and or their work situation, and it seems like the spouse is always the last one to get reap these affections, and by taking this time, I think it really strengthens them and then gives both the energy to do what they need to do. Now, you have the conference coming up, the marriage you've always wanted, and it's in the Detroit area. It's happening at the Grosse Pointe Memorial Church in Grosse Pointe Farms, and it's going to be on April 18th. I'm so excited about this. I want to try to make it myself. Can you expand on the topics in the workshop that you'll be discussing?
Yeah, Carol, we obviously will talk about the five love languages, but that's only one session. We talk about communication and particularly how to solve conflicts without arguing, because for many couples, they've had little training in how to do that, and so consequently, their differences emerge. They don't know how to solve them. They end up arguing with each other. They say hurtful things to each other. It's a downward spiral.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about communication in general and particularly how to do that. And then we have a session also on the sexual part of marriage, which is an important part of marriage, as you well know. And we talk also about if you really want to improve your marriage, where do you start? Most people start the wrong place. They start by trying to get their spouse to change, trying to do things differently, and it comes across as condemnation and judgment. So we talk about how to start and the steps you take, which begins with yourself and what you can begin to do to create a different climate in the marriage. So it's a really practical and a lot of humor. I don't mean I tell jokes. It's a lot of real-life humor.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the guys come and say, you know, Dr. Chapman, I didn't really want to come to this thing. My wife kind of drug me here, but I'm so glad I came. This has been fun.
Great. Good. I have to tell my husband that, too.
Yeah.
Now, someone's not married. Can an unmarried couple come to the show? And would there be some benefit to a couple who are going through a separation or have gotten divorced? Do you think that's going to be a valuable workshop for those individuals?
I think the answer is yes, both to single adults. We often have single adults who come who just want to learn about marriage. Or we have engaged couples who come or dating couples who come. And then, yes, we always have couples who come who are struggling. Some who are even already separated, and some even already divorced, but they're thinking, could we do something and get back together? So I think any couple at any stage of marriage, whatever they're going through, good marriages are going to be better, and struggling marriages, we hope, are going to find answers to take steps in a positive direction.
Do you have any statistics available as to, do you know how many people or couples you've prevented from getting a divorce?
You know, I don't really. I know in my counseling, you know, there's been numerous people where that's happened. And at my seminars, many people come back 2 or 3 years later and say, Dr. Chapman, we attended your seminar, and that's where our reconciliation started. After that, we were able to talk to each other. We began to work on things. But I don't have any statistics.
Wow. I have truly, truly enjoyed speaking with you, Dr. Chapman. I think you are fabulous, and the beautiful gift you're giving to couples is truly amazing. So, Dr. Chapman, God bless you. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful evening, and I'll look forward to seeing you on the 18th.
You're listening to Today's Woman Radio Show with Dr. Carol Kowalczyk of Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health. I'm Dana Clark. The show is sponsored by Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health. Visit MIFertility.com to learn more or just call 586-576-0431. Welcome back to Today's Woman Radio Show with Dr. Carol Kowalczyk of Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health. I'm Dana Clark. Now it's time to discuss a day in the life. We'll be talking about a cause near and dear to Dr. Carol's heart, Seasons of Life Fertility Foundation. Show is sponsored by Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health. To learn more, visit MIFertility.com or call 586-576-0431. Now, Dr. Carol, what is the Seasons about? What is it?
Seasons of Life Fertility Foundation was an opportunity for my program, Michigan Center for Fertility, to give back to the community in a fertility way.
Okay.
It was founded in 2011. It's a nonprofit organization where once per season, the board of directors will pick out of applicants one recipient to receive significantly reduced fertility care.
Okay.
And this foundation started, yes, everyone needs has a financial need because in Michigan, like many other states, insurances don't cover a whole lot of fertility.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we were looking for couples with life-changing events. So the recipients have been cancer patients. There was a burn victim, someone who a heart transplant patient who has overcome obstacles in their life. And once per season, you need to go to seasonsoflifefertilityfoundation.com, and you would want to write an essay about your story.
Okay.
And your fertility journey.
Mm-hmm.
And we will review that story. And if you qualify as a candidate, we would then ask for extra information, and like once per season, we will help with that fertility success, hopefully. And our deadline for this cycle is March 15th.
Okay, so that's coming up soon.
Right. So you will have us with the opportunity to do this. You'll have a significant decrease in your cost of fertility. And many times it includes IVF as well.
Okay.
So we try to give that benefit to patients. My thought is right now there are a few centers who are part of the foundation that works with us. But my goal is to have centers of excellence throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
So that once we have enough funding in our foundation, then I'm going to be able to open this up to other centers in Michigan to join, and also know other centers around the area. I also am looking in other resources for funding, mm-hmm. and we have had some drug companies, fertility drug companies, who've approached us, mm-hmm. who want to help to sponsor this foundation. The skincare line also, remember?
Yes. In Harmony.
In
I
Harmony.
Use it every day.
You're beautiful. Oh, you're beautiful before. But in Harmony Organics, that's the other piece that all intertwines, is for any product over $10, $1 of every product goes into that Seasons of Life Fertility Foundation.
Now, how did you think of this? How did you first get this idea to do this, to help, to give back? Well, I mean, you already do, but, you know, this is above...
I my heart bleeds for patients who are trying to get
because
pregnant.
Because it is expensive.
It's expensive, Dana, and it's a medical condition.
Yeah.
It's a medical condition, like diabetes and high blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So my staff is very, very supportive of this foundation, and our office really tries to help our patients mm-hmm. as much as we can.
Yes,
we really try to help find the most reasonable drug costs out there, mm-hmm. and we try to work within their insurance. I'm not a fertility center that throws everyone at IVF right away. State your name, sign the IVF contract.
Mm-hmm.
I try to help patients get pregnant with the most affordable options first that is appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found that those situations, sometimes those patients can't get pregnant that way, but how can they afford it?
Yeah.
And they've had life circumstances which have not allowed them to be able to go on to that next level, and I felt it important to establish something like this.
Okay, so if someone wants more information, they can check out SeasonsOfLifeFertilityFoundation.com. Can anyone contribute? What if I just want to give?
Absolutely. Anyone can contribute, and they can go through that foundation as well. And thank you for anyone who does. Appreciate
it. Yes, that is much needed. Now, coming up next month, in March already, is the annual Dearborn Women's Expo. So what kind of things are going to be there? It's going to be at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center the Sunday night after our show airs in March. So who's going to be there? Do we have any info?
You know, it's very, very, a very good event for women. And the Dearborn Women's Expo has about 100 exhibitors. A lot of the exhibits are catering to what women enjoy, and there's going to be a variety of fitness, fashion, food, you name it, and it is a great opportunity for Girls Day Out, and you'll find that it's going to be a lot of fun. All proceeds benefit the Children's Leukemia Foundation of Michigan,
mm-hmm.
and in addition to 100 exhibitors, there's going to be a silent auction, a 50-50 raffle, a duck pond for prizes, again, fitness and fashion show. It's $3 admission, free parking, children under 12 free, and for more information, you could go to www.showforwomen.com, Dearborn Women's Expo.
All right, and next month we're going to talk about some spring trends and spring fitness. We're ready to
see the
get
sunshine,
the
girl. See the sunshine. Finally, finally, finally.
So that'll be coming up next month on the show on Today's Women. And with that,
you go, girl. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger.